So to try to quickly recap and move forward, so yesterday we started the question, a little bit of an introduction to the Hashgafa of Prizbul, because the Hashgafa is incredibly important here, both internally and beyond, that and both locally and globally, because we want to certainly understand what is at play here with this concept. But also, together with it, Prizbul has an outsized role in the perception of the halachic system. And it's important that we clarify exactly how it operates and how it doesn't operate because of the perception that comes along with it. So we started yesterday to explain that the perception that often accompanies Prizbul is that you see from here that if the rabbis are motivated enough, they can get around the Torah any way they want. And in the case of Prizbul, they're motivated to try to help the rich people not have to give up on their loans, not have to lose the repayment. So therefore, even the Torah says that they should indeed waive the loans, they should indeed cancel the loans. The rabbis, because they wanted to help these rich people, they got around it, and so too you can get around anything that is challenging. And that's very much a misconception on a number of levels. And we started to explain yesterday just to kind of take it apart. And the truth is there's many components to it. And we started to take that apart a little bit as to why there's so many different angles of disagreement towards that statement. So first we started that just a very basic foundational point, is it even true that we're dealing here with a din d'oraisa? Is it the case that Shemitah's Ksafim is a din min ha-Torah? So we started to point out that it's probably not the case, that even though a few weeks ago we read Parshas Re'eh, and it was quite clear there that the end of the Shemitah year brings with it Shemitah's Ksafim, Miketz, that at the end of the 7 years we have this obligation to cancel loans, and it certainly does seem to be Torah law right there, explicitly spelled out. But there is significant reason to assume that Shemitah's Ksafim today is Midrabanan. That is a machlokas, practically speaking, but that is definitely the majority view. It's based on an opinion of the Gemara that links Shemitah's Ksafim to Shemitah's Karkaos. And Shemitah's Karkaos is presumably also Drabana. Now, there's a lot to explain that. That takes us into a more complex point as to why Shemitah's Karkaos would be Drabana and has a number of possibilities, most likely because it's tied into Yovel, and Yovel we don't observe today. So, next step, why don't we observe Yovel? That's also a Gemara that's tied into other factors. We don't have all the Jews living in Israel in their assigned ancestral Shvatim plots. But whatever it is, we don't observe Yovel today. We don't observe Yovel, therefore that's one possible reason why we don't observe Shemitah min ha-Torah. There are a few other possible reasons also. And the Gemara that we saw yesterday has an association between Shemitah's Karkaos and Shemitah's Ksafim, the obligation not to work the land and the obligation to cancel loans. So therefore, if it's not min ha-Torah to leave the land unworked, it's presumably not min ha-Torah to cancel loans as well. There is a debate about that, and there are some Rishon who maintain Shemitah's Ksafim is still min ha-Torah. And on the other extreme, there are some who maintain that Shemitah's Ksafim is not even Midrabanan, and that rather it is a Midas Chasidus, that it is something that we take on voluntarily. And we'll discuss a little bit the implications of such a position, and there are significant implications just to that possibility. But the view of most Rishonim, and this is the view the Rambam says clearly, is that Shemitah's Ksafim nowadays is Midrabanan. And the Gemara seems to make that a prerequisite for the functionality of Prizbul. And that we discussed yesterday, that the Gemara here on the beginning of Lamed Vav Amud Beis, so the Gemara raises the question, which is the first thing that people take note of when it comes to Shemitah, that Shemitah seems to get around the Torah. So Gemara asks, how could it be? How could it be that the Torah says cancel loans and Hillel was able to make this enactment? So the answer the Gemara has here on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Beis, whether or not this is the only answer, but this is the first answer that's presented, is that Hillel is dealing with a context where Shvius is not min haTorah. So that starts at the bottom of Vav Mar Aleph, that telling us that Shvius b'zman hazeh is Rabbanan, that's the position of Rebbe. So now the top line of Vav Mar Beis, Takin Rabbanan Tishamek Zechel Shvius. So Chazal came and they instituted this rabbinic Shemitah as a Zecher L'Shvius. And remember that term because it's going to be an important term. So if it is indeed rabbinic, so apparently this is important background to how Hillel was able to do this. And then the Gemara says, well, that presents a whole other question, because then that's getting around Torah law in a different way. Because if there is no Shemitah's K'safim B'zman Hazeh, so then how can we impose it without the Torah telling us that? Because by Torah law, you have to pay back your loans. And if there's no cancellation of loans, so then you're obligated to pay back. So how could the rabbis come and say, don't pay back? And the Gemara gives two answers to that, which we'll come back to. But that's the interesting part, that the question flips. Not how can we get around Shemitah's Ksafim, but how can we impose Shemitah's Ksafim midrabanan? That seems to be a runaround Torah law. Okay, so far so good. That was a little complicated, but everybody with me? Okay, so now how significant is it that Shvius is Drabbanan? So the Rambam writes, if you got a chance to see the Rambam, hopefully today everyone saw the Rambam and the Ravid. I got a chance to see that. Right, so according to the Rambam, it's everything. That it only works because Shvius is Drabbanan. The Rambam says that pretty clearly. That we only have the functionality of Prizbul because Shvius is Drabbanan, and without it, it would not work. And the Ravid disagrees. And the Ravid says, no, it doesn't mean that. Because Shvius and Prizbul are able to have the relationship they do because of Hefker Bezdin Hefker, because of that mysterious ability Bezdin has to control ownership of money. So that works on a level of Minat Torah as well. So if that's the case, so yes, Prizbul could work Minat Torah. So we spent some significant time yesterday on the whole Hashgafic issue that opens up there, because this is not, the Ravid does not go further than that. The Ravid just says that part, that it works Minat Torah. But if that's the case, and here again, this part's not in the right, but if that's the case, so does it matter at all, the fact that Shemitah is Rabbanan B'zman Hazeh for Prizbul? If it'll work, the Reis or Rabbanan, does it matter? So we started to discuss, it seems that it does matter, and it seems that, and Tosfos says this, by the way, more explicitly, even if the Reis doesn't, but that even if it could work Min HaTorah, Hillel would not have advocated it had it been in HaTorah. So we have to figure out, one of the questions that's a little unclear here, is what is Hillel's role? Right, Prizbul is clearly credited to Hillel, but what did he do exactly? You want to comment on that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, is it, like, why would he advocate for it if it was, you know, against, even if it worked on a Jairus level? Then, because I guess the other issue of not lending out money.
Okay, so that's important.
And also, Hillel is a figure of, you know, being like Marv Shalom, whatever, like that also.
Okay, so right. So the question is not yet why, right, but if he could have. So if there's a presumption here that it could have worked Min HaTorah, but we wouldn't have used it, that's interesting. So what's unclear is, what did Hillel do? Did Hillel invent Prizbul, or did he popularize Prizbul? So it's possible that his whole takana, this whole association the Mishnah has with Hillel and Prizbul, is that he was the one who said, you know what, let's use this. This exists, and everyone should do it. So if it exists on a level of Minat Torah, that's an easier to understand possibility that Hillel's role was making it popular and making it advocated. And maybe he wouldn't have done that if it was Torah law. So this is a crucially important point that has a lot of levels to it. If it works Min HaTorah, but we wouldn't do it, what does that mean? So, yes, Caleb?
It's B'di'evet.
So it's B'di'evet, okay.
Right. We talk about the whole discussion about it being, you know, the race of, you know, inadvisable issues about Torah. There are things that we say are Minotaur was still inadvisable.
Right, but here it's interesting also that maybe there's another kind of meta theme that there are some situations where we feel we might be at odds with the intent of the Torah. And that certainly should upset us. And that's where we start talking about an evasion or a workaround or a runaround. And in Hebrew, there's a word, harama, which is a hard word to translate because it's a loaded term. And it could come from some language meaning deception. It could mean somehow that you are getting around things. And there are certain things that we have in Jewish life and culture that sound like they are in that category. So selling chametz before Pesach has been alleged to be a harama. Others disagree. Others say it is, but it doesn't matter because harama is not a bad thing. So there's a lot. It's hard to translate the word because there's all kinds of levels of debate about its power. So what is or isn't a harama? Does it matter? Because maybe harama is a judgment-neutral term. Is harama bad? Is harama okay? Is harama sometimes necessary? So there is a view some achronim have, most prominently associated with the Bechor Shor. It's a sefer on some mesechtas. He also wrote on Shrita called Tvua Shor. So the author was Rav Alexander Shor in the 1700s, where he maintained that a harama is only acceptable when dealing with dinim drabanan. And with Torah law, we don't allow haramas, so haramas don't even work. It's not clear what he means. But in order for it to be, in order for haramas to be on the table, we have to be dealing with rabbinic law. Yeah.
Chametz is pretty Torah, I think.
Yes, it is. Now, that's a whole separate topic. Happens to be that he controversially maintains there, he's not a big fan of Mechiras Chametz, which is a part of how he gets on to this, except that he thinks that our selling of Chametz at home is actually dealing with Chametz Midrabanan, because Bittul plays a role. It's a very controversial and complex statement, and it's arguable hugely, but that's the premise. So, as part of that, I'd love to get into that, but it would take us till Pesach to clarify. It's a fascinating point, but it's just way out of our time scope. But that's his premise, that a harama is only acceptable when dealing with rabbinic law. He doesn't explain why. He points to a Gemara that sounds like it. Proof is also arguable. But that's his premise. And a number of achronim accepted that. Many did not. There's a whole literature behind it. But that might be a play here. Right? If we feel that Prozbul is somehow getting around the intent of the Torah, that the Torah says we're supposed to cancel loans, and here we have a way that is effective, but still getting us to a result that is against the Torah's intent, so maybe that's a problem. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that we should feel uncomfortable about.
You use the word get around. Isn't it Dafka, the opposite of what the Torah is saying?
It's too soft of a term.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would love to, if we had a month, I would love to go into all the ins and outs of this, because the way it affects, so last year was still a straight to year. So last year we spoke about the Hetem Mechira, which is very much debated within this context. And Chametz, maybe we can revisit it at Pesach time. I'm always happy to talk about that topic because it's so fascinating. But here, so it does seem like it, right? That's what bothers us, right? So it seems like the Torah wants the loans canceled, and yet here we are ensuring the opposite result. And certainly that's what bothers us. So is there a difference if we're dealing with rabbinic law as opposed to Torah law? So it could be that just that very fact, before getting into any other details, might make a difference, that rabbinic law we may have a whole different attitude towards, as the Bechor Shor was asserting. Now, why would that be? So it could be that rabbinic law itself is structurally different. That if we're worried, as we should be, that we're not fulfilling the spirit of the law, so maybe rabbinic law doesn't have a spirit, meaning that if the nature of rabbinic law comes from the pasuk in Shoftim that you read a few weeks ago, lo sasur min hadavar, we shouldn't deviate from what the rabbis say, we should listen to the rabbis. So some conceptualize all of rabbinic law as obedience, that we follow what the rabbis say. So it could be, one could argue, that if you're following the letter of the law, that is the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is to follow the letter of the law. So if it's technically okay, it's okay. As opposed to Torah law, where no, it doesn't suffice for it to be technically okay. it has to be technically okay and okay with the spirit of the law. But the rabbinic law may have a different nature to it, and that's a whole body of literature as well. Hi.
This is an in-between, though, because we know that the Torah says that, like, we know you're not going to want to lend in the seventh year, but you should. We also mm-hmm. know that it doesn't specifically say the concept of personal.
Okay.
So it's this in-between in those.
But you're right that these are all elements, and I think in general, whenever we deal with one of these kind of situations where we have a device, we're not sure how we should be comfortable with it or not. So a part of why we're comfortable with Prisbol but not comfortable with Hetta Mechira according to those one, or why we're more comfortable with Mechiras Chametz than we are with Hetta Mechira but more comfortable with Prisbol than we are with Mechiras Chametz, there's a whole scale here. So a part of it is because there's a convergence of different factors. So some of it is how far is it from the Torah's intent, some of it has to do with how well does it match the letter of the law, and some of it has to do with what's up against it, which is also what you're alluding to, that there is a counter pressure here, which is very significant, which we'll try to unpack today as well. So the fact that it's rabbinic may make a difference broadly, just all the rabbinic law may have a different attitude, but it may even be more acute here, that specifically this rabbinic law may itself take on a character that affects them. So that also we started to lay out a little bit yesterday, that why should it be that rabbinic law should make a difference? Well, it could be also that the nature of the rabbinic law of Shemitah's Ksafin is fundamentally different than the Torah law of Shemitah's Ksafin. That the Torah law maybe tells us to cancel loans for a certain reason. Even that reason we have to talk about a little bit. But whatever it is, maybe the Torah tells us to cancel loans for a certain reason. And the rabbis did it for a different reason. Because the Gemara says, why did the rabbis do it? Because we don't want to forget about Shemitah. It's here to keep the memory of Shemitah alive, which may have a different goal. And even if we are going to say the rabbinic law has more goals to it than just obedience, but still, that may still be different fundamentally than what the Torah version of Shemitah's Ksafim is. There's also another element here, which we're going to expand upon a little bit. Caleb brought it up yesterday, that maybe the environment of Shemitah when it's Min HaTorah is different than that when it is Drabanan. And that we know there's a whole theme of Emunah that is part and parcel of Shemitah that is tied together with certain promises from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the like. And that may only apply when dealing with Shemitah D'Oraisa. So we mentioned yesterday, for example, the other half of Shemitah, the Karkos issue and the Hetta Mechira, which is much more controversial than Prisbol for reasons that we'll hopefully be able to explain. So a part of the whole debate was that why should we have any strategy to get out of leaving our lands unworked? The Torah says it's going to be hard, and God says, I promise I'll take care of you. Tzivisias brachasim. So some respond to that no, that's only true when Shemitah is Min HaTorah. So then there's a promise. In fact, some explain it that it's almost like Rav Yisrael Engel, who we mentioned yesterday, he says it's part of it also, that it's pretty much automatic that because God is running the world, so when Shemitah is Min HaTorah, there's an automatic bracha that comes with that. But when it's not, it's a whole different level. And then to assume that we have a promise, he says that's basically somchan al neis, you're relying on a miracle. So is there some background dynamic like that when it comes to Shemitah's Ksafim as well? That's a strong possibility, and that's something we'll also have to explore. Eric?
Maybe I missed this yesterday, I'm sorry I wasn't here, but...
That's it. Happy to. It's month of Tshuva. Yes.
So you use the word harama, right? That was the...
Yeah, but cautiously. Okay, yeah, because I emphasize that it's a cautious...
Does anyone propose that things like Prozbul and Bechiras Chametz are mitzvahs, or is like no one proposing that? It's just kind of like, okay, you want to get around the mitzvahs, so this is what you're going to do.
So each one has its own literature, which is also why I'm so cautious, because each one has its own history, its own background. And so just the three that we've mentioned today, Prisbol, Mechiras Chametz, and Hetta Mechira, are all so different from each other as far as level of acceptability and pedigree and history and all of it. So, a part of it is what are you up against? So I think we'll hopefully today see a little bit that there may be somewhat of a mitzvah of prizbul, as we'll see why there might be reason to say that. It also impacts what we saw this morning in the Beis Medrash, and we'll try to address that a little bit also. While Hetzer Mechira, it's very hard to say it's a mitzvah unless you really believe that it was life or death, which some did. So, you know, maybe could take and maintain that kind of position. And Mechira's Chametz, that's, again, somewhere in the middle of all these things. So there are those who have taken the position that Mechira's Chametz today has become a part of what we do to cover all our bases, and therefore it's in the family of Tashbisu, and therefore it's something that we assertively should do, even if you plan on getting rid of everything, you should still go through a mechira anyway. And others are very much not into that idea. So each one is
focus.
Yep, exactly. So okay, but so as far as whether we're dealing with a deraisa or drabanan, so you see a little bit how that is an issue here, and some of the reasons why it matters. Okay, so far so good. Okay, so then we also started to discuss the question of, if the original statement is, oh, you see the rabbis can get around Torah law to benefit the rich people, so we see that it's probably not Torah law, but what about this part about benefiting the rich people? So is that what's going on? So there, we asserted very strongly that that is not the case, that the benefit here is for the poor people. And yesterday we kept the door open because of the weather, and that was good show and tell also, because the imagery of closed doors is what we're afraid of. That the idea, as we mentioned also in the first part, this comes up throughout Shas, that we are very concerned about ne'ilas delas b'fnei lovin, that we shouldn't slam the door in the face of those who need to borrow money. And we're very worried that shmitas k'safin may cause that reality, that it may cause people to not find loans available. And the Gemara is very explicit that that was what motivated Hillel, right? That Hillel was not looking to help his rich friends not have to lose out, but nimnu ha'amil halvos. He saw that people were holding back from lending money, and therefore he had to take the step of either enacting or popularizing a strategy to make sure the poor would get their money back. Even so, make sure the poor would get the loans in the first place, because they'll have the confidence of the lenders who know that they're going to get their money back. Now, together with this, there was also the spiritual benefit of the lenders, because, as you know, so the Gemara cites the Pasuk in Re'eh, which says there's a big Isser involved in not lending. So, Hishomer, that's the language of Isser, that you have to beware that you should not have a mentality that is called Blial, that is called evil, negative, as we translated yesterday, Caleb, or break the word down to mean without any sense of responsibility, any sense of obligation to God or to man. Any way you cut it, it's bad. So one should not have this Blial attitude that he's not going to help out people because of the impending Shemitah. Now, in terms of Mar Makomos, by the way, so yesterday I gave a shorter list, but it did something a little unusual. If you noticed, I said that quote put that pasuk on the list and just wrote Mefortion, because if you look, wherever you look, you'll find some interesting discussion about the intent and the scope of that pasuk. So it kind of left that open for you to explore however you wanted to. But we'll see today, a little bit tomorrow, hopefully a lot today, that there's some significant debate about what that pasuk is talking about, and that's pretty important, because that really is the thrust of things. But Hillel was motivated first and foremost to make sure that the poor receive the loans that they need, and also that the rich should not find themselves in violation of this Isser. Now, we mentioned it's a little bit confounding that the Gemara does also bring the possibility here of a focus on the rich being protected, because of the language here on the bottom of Lamed Vav Mem Beis, the top one is Zayin and Aleph, the Gemara says, my prusbul. Amar Rav Chisda, prusbuli ubuti, that this is a takana, Rashi says, on behalf of the rich and the poor. Buli means the rich, buli elu ashir, the Gemara says. We noted that's the source of the idea that the rich people are the bullies in the school. So they're called buli, and the Gemara brings a raya for that, and the poor are called the buti. So it's a takana, either on behalf of the rich, they shouldn't lose out. That's how Rashi has it over here, Shalo Yafsidu. So that would be the most supportive of this idea that we're trying to help them. But this is together with the focus on the poor, and really it's all about that, because if the rich are going to be afraid they're going to lose out, then they're not going to lend, and that's something that is a tremendous concern. So it's really all about that, and together with the spiritual impact on the rich who are going to not do what they're supposed to do. And we mentioned yesterday, this is actually the Bach, that there's kind of a negative synergy here that it all gets into a vicious cycle, because some of the rich won't lend because they'll be afraid of losing out on their initial capital here, and some of the rich will. The tzaddikim among the rich will still lend anyway, but they'll have to overextend themselves because they're not going to have any help from the other rich people. The poor people will get some loans, but not as much as they need, because they'll only get from the tzaddikim, and therefore they're going to have a harder time even paying back what they otherwise would have been able to had loans been more available. And now the rich tzaddikim are going to lose that more, because they're going to even have a harder time getting paid back for what they did. So it's all going to be a cycle. It's going to be a big mess. So Hillel address this. Now, just in terms of the language here, by the way, so a big thank you to Yiddish Schechter for looking it up, the Greek of the of Kuzbol, which, of course, is something we try to do at least once a day. So the origin of the word here, which the Gemara seems to be addressing, although, you know, there's some room to say this is more kind of in a mnemonic sense. The Gemara says, my Kuzbol. So does that mean this is what the word means, or this is what is kind of being indicated by the word? So we had a little back and forth about this on the chat this morning, sort of call it a back and forth, where I acknowledged my lack of Greekitude, my lack of proficiency in Greek. It's kind of all Hebrew to me. So I recall afterwards that my sister is proficient in Greek. So I texted her afterwards to ask about the meaning of Prusbol. And we went back and forth about this a little bit. So the language from the definition that Yedidja was circulating, and also as she put forward also, is that it has a connection to the word delivery, that pros is to put something forward, and bull is like to throw things, like ballistics. So you throw something forward, you deliver it. So that, as you'll see in a few minutes, my sister was commenting that it's interesting, because it doesn't seem like that's the most important idea here. Like, if you ask somebody, what's Prosbo all about? They say it's about delivery, so you wouldn't necessarily think so. And here, just to ramp the synergy up even higher, so she mentioned, like, so for example, a get involves delivery, but you wouldn't define it based on the delivery. So that's actually what we were talking about last week, right? So what is the ikker of what a get is? So how much is the delivery of the get, which is also reference to the pasuk, how much is that what it's about? So is Prusbol somehow defined by its delivery component? So it might actually be, and maybe that is different from get. So get's not going to be named after its delivery, but maybe Prusbol is. So that's something we'll come to in a second. But so this idea of the Gemara is using different interpretations of it. So for example, Prus, which we apparently mean to put forward. So Rashi writes here Takana. So again, is that the literal translation, or is that there's some kind of indication here? But without Rashi, so you could say the Gemara means Prus is something that's put forward on behalf of either the bully or the buti. But bully in Greek really is going to mean something different. So whether the Gemara means this literally as etymology or a way to remember it, it's a somewhat of an open question. But in any event, so what we have here is a couple of major nekudos ready to chip away at that initial statement that Prusbol is the rabbis getting around the Torah to help the rich. So they're not getting around the Torah, and it's not for the sake of the rich. It's for the sake of the needy. Certainly that is the emphasis of what it is we're trying to accomplish. Now, the core question with the Rambam and the Ravid, so maybe we'll say a little bit more about this later in the week, but just to give a little bit of background. So there is a machlokes as to what the mechanics of Prusbol are. And God willing, we will say more about it, but just to give you a little bit of an idea of what it's about. So the Ravid was arguing, why shouldn't it work min ha-Torah? It's hefker bezin hefker. Now, what you may have noticed when you read the Gemara, I don't know how you read it the first time when you saw this Gemara, there's a little bit of a machlokas that comes out in Rashi Tosfos also into how to read the Gemara about with Rav and Abaye, because what's the flow here? And so the Gemara on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph asked, how could it be that Hillel could make a takana against the Torah? The Torah says that the Shemitah's Ksafim, and he's saying, no, don't. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye b'Shvias b'Zman Hazeh. Right, so Shvias is Rabbana nowadays, and Abaye goes on to say, Rabbi he. The Gemara goes on to Rabbi he, that this is what Rabbi explains, that Shvias is Rabbanan because of the connection to the other half of Shvias, that Shemitah's Karkos. So then the Gemara has the question, well, wait a minute, then we have a problem. So if by Torah law you have to pay back your loans, there's no Shemitah's Ksafim nowadays, so the Torah requires you to pay back your loans, so then how could the rabbis as a whole institute rabbinic Shemitah's Ksafim? That's going against the Torah. That's telling people not to pay back the loans that they're obligated in. So what does the Gemara say to that? So the response is, could that be? Torah says it's not canceled. The rabbis say it is canceled. How would that work? So Amar Abaye Sheval Taisahu, Rava Amar Hefker Bezdin Hefker. So some Rishonim read that to mean that we're going back to the original question, that how could it be that Hillel made his prizbul? It's against Torah law. So Abaye will say, well, no, it's only rabbinic law. And then he has to answer, how could you make rabbinic law against the Torah? So that's because of Sheval Tassi, because it's passive. But Rava is giving a different answer to the first question. Rava is saying that, no, Hillel was able to put in principle because of Hefker, Bezd, and Hefker. And therefore, it should work, even if it's Torah law. You could skip the whole Abaye part. According to that reading, you could put a parenthesis around the first Amar Abaye and Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, and put the closed parentheses after Sheval Tassu, and say that's all one approach. And now Rav is saying another approach. Hefker Bez and Hefker. So that's one way to read this Gemara. The other way is that no, everyone acknowledges we're dealing with Rabban. But now we have another question to ask. How could the rabbis make their rabbinic Shemitah's Ksafim against the Torah obligation to pay back loans? And then we have two answers. Abaye saying it's passive, and Rav is saying Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker to answer that. But he wasn't saying that to the original statement of Hillel. So you see where there's some ambiguity in how to read this Gemara and what Rav is Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. So it's complex. What it boils down to is when Rav says Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, is he explaining the initial prosbul? Or is he, no, he's only answering the second question, that he's explaining how Shemitah's Ksafim could exist. But prosbul is not about Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. So it comes out that there's possibly a machlokus in the Gemara if Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is in play here or not.
Doesn't Rashi take like the quasi approach, meaning saying for Rava it could work for both, whether you first or second question, but Abaye it only works according to the
correct. That's a part of the whole ambiguity here. So basically, it's very unclear from the Gemara whether Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is crucial to Prizbul or not. You could read the Gemara either way, and the Rishonim debate that. Everybody with me, I know this is a little bit of a roller coaster ride. Yeah, so that point that the Rambam seems to not accept. Right? The Rambam seems to assume it's not Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, and it only works because it's Drabbanan. And so the Rambam is saying, what are you talking about? It's Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, and that works even on a level Minatar. So the Achronim discuss, why does the Rambam not think Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker works here? And we'll need more background in that, but among the possible answers is that maybe Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is literal. It means that it can make property ownerless, but it doesn't necessarily move property to a new owner. And that would be outside the scope of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. There are various explanations as to why one conceptually would reject Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker as a possibility. But this also brings up the topic that there are a number of theories as to what the operating system of Prizbul is. So So does it function based on Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker? And this, God willing, is something by Wednesday, hopefully, we'll see more about, just to give a little bit of a background now. Does it work based on Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker? That's a possibility. Does it work based on another idea the Mishnah mentions? You've seen the Mishnah by now, hopefully, Mishnah in Shviyas. The concept of Moser Shtaros of LeBezdin, right, which we, during the base Midrash this morning, you saw that happen literally. Right? We signed quiz bowls in front of the Bezdin. That was the actual Bezdin of America, meeting in our base Midrash this morning. So they signed quiz bowls in front of them and turned it over to them. So the Mishnah says that one who has debts in paper, one who is holding on to obligations from other people, if he hands over the shtaros to Bezdin and says, you can collect whenever you want, that is not affected by Shemitah. So Shemitah does not cancel when you turn over your debts to Bezdin. So is Prozbul just that? Is Prozbul just taking advantage of that tool? What do you think? Yes?
It could be like sort of giving it, like Bezdin giving permission for people to do it through the shtar. Like almost like Bezdin like allocating like their work towards just filling out the shtar, then you know, hand it in and you're fine. And you're
like a little bit of both. Like it takes that concept and expands on it.
Right. It's kilu. It's in most of the shows the Bezdin, except for like just like a child.
Another
copy.
Step.
Right.
Yeah. So that's probably a good possibility. Of course, the right answer would have been machlokas, right? Because this is a significant machlokas that Rashi in a few places, I gave you a list more Rashi in three places, says that it is Moser Shtaros of the Bezdin. And others object, Tosfos and others point out that the Mishnah seems to list them separately. The Mishnah says that Moser Shtaros of the Bezdin, Shmias does not cancel. You may have noticed I tend to say Shmias because I'm combining and deciding time where to say Shemitah or Shvias. So it comes out as Shmias a lot of times. So Shvias does not cancel Moser Shtaros of the Bezdin, and it does not cancel Prozbul with Prozbul. So it sounds like they're two different ideas. That's how some of the Rishonim object to Rashi. And the possibility is, I think, similar to what Yedidja was saying, is that maybe the mechanism is essentially Moser Shtaros of the Bezdin, but there's an extra step here in that Hillel advocated that everyone do this, or that he created this tool to make it easier for everybody, but he's building off of the concept of Moser Shtaros of the Bezdin. So it could be it's both. It is and it isn't Moser Shtaros. It's more than Moser Shtaros of Bezdin, but it comes from that. So either it's Hefker Bezdin, or it's Moser Shtaros of, or like some of the Rishonim object, maybe it's something else. It's something that comes from a new innovation. Maybe Hillel actually did make something new, and it's not from a previously existing tool. So some point out, Rav Asher Weiss has an essay about this, and others point out that if you read the Prozbul, if you saw it this morning, so it has the language of Mosrani, right, that I am turning this over. So does that not indicate that it is Moser Shtaros LeBezdin? It says it on the thing. So Rav Asher Weiss and his Sefer Angitin and others, so they suggest that no, it doesn't mean that, Mesira, that there's a form here based on the language of the Rambam, the way he reads it, is that it means I am giving a declaration, Mesiras Moda, to Bezdin, that I am part of the Prozbul system. But it does not evoke that other usage of the same verb of Moser Shtaros LeBezdin. This is something else. Now, here to get back to our Greek and to my conversation with my sister, so that presumably goes to the point here that if Prozbul means delivery, so that actually works well with what he's saying, that the whole essence of Prozbul is a Mesira, whether a Mesiras Moda or a Mesiras Shtaros LeBezdin. But if the essence of Prozbul is turning something over, so then if it's a word that means delivery, so then that actually works well. And we can draw the distinction between this and Gittin, where the delivery of the get is a detail of what a get is, doesn't define the get per se, while Prozbul is about delivery. Prozbul maybe is indeed about turning your shtaros over to Bezdin. Okay, so that has to do with just as far as the Gemara talking about who it's for. But as Avi pointed out, the others pointed out, so there's another big element here, and that is the weight of the Isser. Right, that the Torah already anticipated this issue. And this, just to introduce a little bit, plays a very big role in this whole discussion. Because we want to maintain that the rabbis are never working at odds with the Torah, but that the rabbis are taking their cue from the Torah. So especially when we're trying to figure out how this tool is consistent with the intent of the Torah, so the more you see the Torah itself spelling out the issues, the better we'll feel. So Hillel is motivated by not wanting the poor to lose out. And the Torah is very clear in being worried about this. The Torah says that maybe this Blial guy will say, Karvish nasa shevesh nasa shmita, that it's almost Shemitah time and I'm scared, so I'm not going to lend. So that fear was already spelled out in the Chumash. Zandi?
I feel like that's more of a double-edged sword. Meaning
it is double-edged sword. I mean, it has that's part of the problem,
right?
If I'm interpreting you correctly, in that it has impact in both directions.
Right.
I think you're very right. So first of all, I'll give you some more source to look about this tomorrow, the shorter Seder, but there's a fascinating machlokus in general about what is the intent of the Torah in telling us this Isser. It's clearly an Isser, and it's counted as an Isser. Again, Hishamer is one of the four words the Torah uses to convey a prohibition. So this refusal to lend under these circumstances is an Isser. But what's the nature of the Isser? How would you define it? I'm telling you that there is some room to disagree. There's some level of machlokas. What is the Torah warning against in that pasuk? What would you think? Yes.
It sounds like very specific that you have a certain intent that because of Shemitah, that maybe you normally would lend, but because Shemitah is coming, you're concerned that you won't get paid back, then that you're considering not lending, and that you shouldn't do that.
Okay, that's a very fascinating formulation, because you start off by, by saying it's specific. There are some who read it with that kind of specific interpretation, which is very interesting, but it actually skips over some steps. But you're right, that is a possible reading of it, and then it is highly specific. So there is a basic machlokas in general, that some read that to mean that this is not really about Shemitah. This is in general about the mitzvah to lend. And the Torah is saying, do not be scared off by insufficient excuses. That if you are capable of lending money to someone in need, don't refuse for bad reasons. Now here, that's a very subjective statement, and just to highlight how subjective it is, so what do we mean to say bad reasons? So it sounds like, this is, for example, how Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva, I'll give you a look tomorrow, see that how Rabbeinu Yonah reads it, that a bad reason is that anything that's just not a good enough concern, the Torah is addressing here. And it tells it in the context of Shvius to show even that's not a good enough reason. So somebody who might think, well, listen, I got a good reason. Shemitah is coming, and that's going to cancel the loan, so you understand, I just can't get involved. The Torah is saying, no, it's not a good enough reason. And so all the more so, all the other not good reasons is part of the issue. Now, again, it's very subjective, because the Torah does allow you to take a mashkon. You're allowed, and in fact, some Rishonim sound like it's a mitzvah to take a mashkon, which is interesting also. So the fact that you can take collateral, so that shows, and other things show as well, that you're not obligated to lend to someone you don't trust. You're not obligated to lend in a situation where you really believe there's going to be stam default. He's not going to lend to you. He's not going to return it to you. So apparently there are good reasons that if you really think the guy's not trustworthy and he's not going to be able to give it back, so then that is a legitimate reason. But apparently there's a spectrum, and there are some reasons that are not good enough, and even the impending shvius is not a good enough reason. So from there and below, that's how Rabbeinu Yonah would read it. That anything below that is not a good reason, even though there do exist good reasons, but anything that's not a good reason is going to involve an Isser. While other Rishonim understand it's actually very Shvius specific, and that it's about a lack of faith in God and the Shvius process. And that there's a strong parallel here to Shmitas Karkos, as would make sense. Right? That in the context of Shmitas Karkos, God says, I want you to leave the land fallow and don't be afraid of the economic impact. I'll take care of you. And there's a parallel idea here also, that I want you also to cancel your debts and don't be afraid of that and I'll take care of you. And somebody who says, well, I am afraid, so I'm not going to lend. So what's the offense there? The offense is against God, so to speak. It's an avera, a lack of faith in Shemitah. So it's not necessarily about refusing the chesed. It's about refusing to acknowledge the power of Shemitah, which would then significantly shift if there is a change in whether Shemitah is deraisa or not.
Yeah, but this comes down to, according to what you just said, it comes down to, is Shemitah ben Adam l'makom ben Adam l'chatero?
Yeah, it probably is both, but you know, well, what exactly is driving it? It's probably more to it. Last year we had a whole conference on the various themes and values that come out of the Mitzvah of Shemitah, because it is pretty packed, and it's probably an element of both. And just to refer back to what Ezra was saying, so there's a very specific kind of combination. So if you look, for example, in Maram Shik and his Sefer HaMitzvos, so there are those who really merge the two in a very specific way. And that basically it's about helping people in need. But Shvius is a time when you're supposed to understand that you have more flexibility to help people in need because God's taking care of you. And therefore, if specifically in Shvius you hold back from lending to somebody because of the Shemitah's Ksafim, so then the offense is that you're not helping the person in need enough. So it's both Shemitah specific about the faith and also about the impact on Chesed. And the specific, highly specific combination of the two. That the message here is that you are supposed to be more generous than you are normally. And if you fail to be generous in this year, so then that creates a specific issue.
But is that the concept, or is the concept that I'm scared that my friend is going to trick me more of like what the person might say? Meaning it's not that I have a lack of faith in Hashem, it's rather that a person like Ben Adam L'Chaveiro is going to...
Well, if you think somebody's really dishonest, like I said, that's a good enough reason any time. But here, he wouldn't need to trick you, right? If the Shvita, that's a new one. So Shmias or Shvita or any of these concepts should come and interfere, so then he wouldn't even have to be clever at all. It would just have this interesting discussion. And Hesarius Tshuva has a tshuva about this, about whether there's an issur to borrow davka specifically because you're going to rely on the cancellation of Shvias. So that's itself finished, but you don't really need to come on to that. It's just that even if there is a valid concern that the person just will let Shvius pass, and then it's going to, he doesn't have to have any fancy tough ones. So how much is that a part of it? So the scope of this Isser is very open-ended as far as where exactly it applies to, what exactly it applies to. But Sefer Achinuch, for example, writes that the Isser applies if you're going to hold back, at least because of Shvius, but whether Shvius is Daraisa Drabanan, you're going to violate Nisra Daraisa. Right? Which is not any kind of a contradiction, because it boils down to the same thing, that this fear, whether it comes from Torah law or it comes from rabbinic law, but Lemaisa, it stops you from lending, that's going to put you in violation of a Torah prohibition. Now, others may disagree. So, for example, the Chassam Sofer and his Chiddushim here to Gittin, he writes that the Isser is only connected to the promise, and here he refers to the promise in the A, because the Torah says, Ki Biglal HaDabar HaZad, that because you do this, God will bless you. So he says, that's assuming there's a mitzvah in the Torah. So if there's no mitzvah in the Torah, he assumes there's no Isser. But even so, it all does connect to this question of whether we have an Isser D'Oraisa or an Isser D'Rabbanan here, or a Mitzvah D'Oraisa or a Mitzvah D'Rabbanan of Shemitah's Kesafim. So there is a lot to try to figure out about the whole relationship. And it's quite a fascinating question about just how far you go with this and what exactly is the scope of the Isser of Hishamer and how is it supposed to address this. So what seems to be a reasonable thing to say, and I think it's going to overflow into tomorrow, it's just a huge topic, this whole trying to appreciate how all the parts come together. So what seems to be a fair thing to say is that what's lurking in the background here, very powerfully, is that there is a mitzvah min haTorah of lending money to people in need. And it's not just a mitzvah. It is a super mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that has an outsized importance. Because chesed is a core value of what it means to be Jewish. The Gemara says that that's how you can tell if somebody's a descendant of a Rama Vina, or are they devoted to chesed. And if I were to ask you for examples of chesed, you'd probably say Bikur Cholma, Machnas Torchen, and Nicham Avinu. Those are all good examples. It's true. But I mentioned this a little bit in the Parsha Shir for Kiseitze. We talked about this a little bit in the context of Ribbis. That lending money is held up in the Gemara and also in the Chumash as one of the main examples of chesed. And the Chafetz Chaim Sefer Avos Chesed, half the Sefer is about lending money. So lending money is a crucial value of chesed. And you have a whole cluster of mitzvos that come to support that mitzvah. It's so important that it's not just one thing, it's a value, and it's given a lot of extra real estate. I don't just mean in terms of words, but even just in terms of counting mitzvos, or extra mitzvos that are a part of it. So what extra mitzvos are connected to lending money? Well, we have an aveira, you're not allowed to pressure somebody who's not able to pay back yet. That's a specific aveira with all kinds of details. We have a huge aveira of ribbis, of collective interest, as we spoke about in the Shira last week, 2 weeks ago. We have, apparently, also a mitzvah of amnesty every 7 years. So it seems reasonable to say that all of those mitzvos are in support of the mitzvah of lending. So if that's the case, so it seems pretty intuitive that it would be a big problem if the supporting mitzvos undermine the core mitzvah. We have one core idea and all of these mitzvahs supporting it. Certainly we wouldn't want the main mitzvah to suffer because of the supporting mitzvahs. So if somebody were to not lend money in the first place because of the impact of the supporting mitzvahs, so that would be something that would clearly be counterproductive. And all the more so, and here's the kicker, right? All the more so if the supportive mitzvah is today Derabbanan. So if we have a key mitzvah, which is Min HaTorah, and a supportive mitzvah, which is Derabbanan, we certainly wouldn't want a situation where the main Torah mitzvah is being undermined by the rabbinic mitzvah. So we're going to have to fill in a lot tomorrow. Hopefully we'll squeeze it all in. But I think you're starting to see the roadmap of what's going on here, of just why Hillel's step here is very, very indicated by the context. I just want to add a few quick notes and then to direct us for tomorrow. So one thing is, you might be saying, okay, so the Torah's message here is, okay, so Hishamer is saying that don't be intimidated by this, so that should solve the whole thing, right? So just tell the rich people not to be scared, and they should live up to their responsibility. Why should we cancel Shmita's Kesafim? Why should we cancel the cancellation? Because they're failing to live up to their din. So first of all, that's an interesting question. How much do we worry about people like that? There's actually a parsha discussion last week also. Several, there's an interesting discussion. Some of the Rishonim ask, some of the Farshim ask, why the Torah starts off with Yifas Tohar and says, as Chazal tell us, Dibra Torah, Kenegedi Tohara. Sometimes we have to help people not violate because of their temptations. So then forget the whole Torah. Let's try to make a way to enable everything so that we don't let people fall into traps. So where do you say, okay, here's your responsibility to live up to the standard, and where do we say, okay, we've got to help make life easier for you so that you're not likely to violate it? That's a little bit the dynamic here, right? That we're trying to save the rich people from violating the sister. Why don't we just say, sorry, live up to the command and don't violate it? But really the bigger theme here is the poor, that we don't want the poor to lose out, and we're worried about that even subconsciously. So we can kind of moralize all day and say, well, you know, the rich people should live up to their expectations. But if there's any aspect that that's not going to happen, if there's any degree to which they're not going to do that, so then the poor are going to lose out. And what do we worry about more? Right, here's a philosophical question. Do we worry more about insisting that everybody be perfect? Or do we factor in the reality that when some people won't, other people will get hurt? And what are we going to do to worry about them? So what do we worry about more? And that's a big part of the whole discussion here. So even if we were to say, okay, we'll give a big Muster Shmuz and say, Hishomer, everyone should make sure not to be intimidated by this. And let's say 75% of the rich people would take it to heart, and they're all going to stay on board. But 25% won't. So that means there'll be 25% less money available to borrow, and the poor people are going to suffer to that degree. Are we willing to let them suffer just so that we can be purists about it? What about that reality that they're not going to get it? Caleb?
Can't Beitin just force the rich people to lend money?
Theoretically, it's interesting. The role of kfiya and staka, you're right, there is some aspect of that. And lending money is connected to staka to such an extent that it's a fair question to ask. But again, practically speaking, in a sense, that kind of highlights what we're saying. Because sometimes, maybe, yes. But 100% of the time, will there be as many loans as there would have been otherwise? And if not, how much do we have to worry about where that's going to lose out? So, Eric and Zambi?
I was going to say, well, like, what if they just say no? And it's like, well, maybe they're halakha. We're going to give them all of this about lending. They're probably worried about halakha, and so then they're might not see what based in. But yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, you look at how business is done nowadays. I mean, you know, investing in loans are a big part of, you know, it's funding. It's why it's important not only to tell those that they need to make sure they're giving their loans, but you should be to make sure the system in which, you know, you don't, the doors are shut in front of those, because
constant refrain. Right,
so there also needs to be a lot of those involved in that. And so I think that we need to, like, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you know, screw the rich people a bit, you know, like, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the Torah is recognizing their importance in the business aspects of society.
Yeah, so that's a big part of it. But also, just to highlight this more, that we still have a question?
Yeah.
What
is it? My question is based on the concept of Hefker based on Hefker.
So that's probably a whole other test. Maybe we'll try
it's
to...
It's not related to it.
All right, so let's hold that one for tomorrow, then. Okay, we'll try to come back. I apologize if we're just getting late. But just want to make one point to set us up for tomorrow. So there is an interesting debate. I mentioned at the outset that there's a machlokas about whether Shemitah's Kesafim, the Zman HaZeh, is applicable to Raisa, the Rabbanan, or not. So we mentioned that there's a view, Baal HaMor, the Ravid, that it is Midas Chasidus today, that it's actually voluntary. So the Ramban, here in Gittin, the Ramban disagrees with that. The Ramban says it can't be. It can't be that it's Midas Chasidus. Because what Chasidus would there be in that? Why, that's not pious. What advantage would there be in being Noel Delis Bifnei Lovin? That you are shutting the door in front of the borrowers. That's not Chasidus. So the question you could ask is, what do you mean? I'm not slamming the door, I'm helping them. I'm saying that people should be encouraged to cancel their loans afterwards. So how does that hurt the poor people? So you see that it means that even if we were to have a culture where people are encouraged to cancel their loans, but they're not obligated to it, but they're told it's Aminus Chasidus, even that peer pressure may result in someone saying, you know what, I'm not going to get involved, because if I lend money and I collect afterwards, everyone's going to look at me in a nasty way. So that will intimidate me from lending in the first place. So that's in the Ilus Dallas with Nailobin. That's already something that's going to reduce the available loans. And even that we are scared of. So that's very striking. So One question I'm going to leave you with, just to orient, continue to looking at the sources. So I don't know how many of you got up to the Gemara Makos Daf Gimel and the Rishonim there. There's a whole list of answers to the Rishonim. So basically, the Rishonim there are addressing the question of who needs Prizvul, because it seems like there are easier ways to deal with it, even without Hefker Bezdin, even without Moser Sharos LeBezdin, which already exists. But also seems from the Gemara there that it's up to any individual to make a tanai. They can make a stipulation that will allow them to continue to collect the loans. So that's a major discussion in the Rishonim, and you'll see there's at least four, five, six answers in the Rishonim, so we'll try to talk about that tomorrow. Why, who even needs Prizbol? So just have these conditions be made, and that will address it, and what's going on there. So have that on the top of your agenda for tomorrow. And now we need a meeting of volunteers.